I'd like to call to order today's meeting of the Committee on Public Safety Policy and Finance, Wednesday, March 8th, 2006. Clerk, would you take the roll?
Chairman Smith?
Here.
Representative Eastland?
Here.
Cornish? Ellison? Hillstrom?
Here.
Johnson? Bestwell?
Here.
Murphy? Nelson?
Here.
Newman?
Here.
Tamar?
Here.
Soderstrom?
Chair notes that we do have the presence of a quorum, so we will take up the consideration of minutes from previous meetings. Then, after that, we'll move on to a presentation, testimony from the Department of Public Safety on proposals for local bonding projects. Then we will go into some local house file bonding projects, which would be the chair's intent that we would give them hearings and lay them on the table for possible inclusion later on. Let us first then go to the minutes of the April 19th, 2005 meeting. They're in the packet. Is there a motion to approve? Representative Newman moves approval of those minutes. Any discussion or questions? Not those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Those minutes are adopted. Then we have the next would be the minutes from Thursday, March 2, 2006. Motion to approve would be in order. Representative Messel moves. Any discussion on those minutes? If not, those please signify for approval. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails, and those minutes are adopted. The last item under minutes would be the ones from March 3, 2006, as in the packet. Motion?
Approval.
Very good. On that motion, all those in favor, if there's no discussion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails, and those minutes are adopted. Yeah. At this time, we will move to Assistant Commissioner Tim Leslie for testimony from the Minnesota Department of Public Safety.
Good afternoon, Chairman Smith, members.
Thank you, Mr. Leslie. Would you state your name and begin your testimony, your presentation?
Yeah, I'm Tim Leslie, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety, and I'm here today to share the Department of Public Safety's perspective on the regionalized police and fire training center concept first reported to the legislature in 1999. The governor's office has asked UPS to review the current proposals in light of the 1999 statewide master plan for fire and law enforcement training facilities. We examined these requests and found that some were inconsistent with the guidelines and recommendations made in the 1999 report. But frankly, our biggest hesitation regarding support for the current concept is that the report and study was done pre-9/11. And we all know that much has changed since then. Some items that were not included in the 1999 report that are now contemporary in our vernacular today is the entire concept of homeland security and the all-hazards approach to managing man-made or natural disasters. Today, we're all aware of how important these concepts are. The regionalization of training that the legislature supported in the 1999 study is the foundation for the nation now in terms of emergency response philosophy in our post-9/11 era. Most of our statewide emergency response planning that we do is grounded in this concept and mandated by our federal partners. But what is a region? Currently, the Sheriff's Association has 6. Health Department has 8. Police chiefs have 18. Fire chiefs and fire departments, 15. The report from 99 suggests 8, 5 in the greater Minnesota area and 3 in the metro. What's also changed since then is the federal mandate that our regional response preparations involve more than just police and fire. We now include 10 disciplines in conversations about regional response training and exercising. Those disciplines are emergency management, law enforcement, fire, hazmat, public works, health care, EMS, public safety communications, public health, and government administration. Since 9/11, the federal government has mandated that states gather information on all critical state assets and critical state infrastructure. After that collection, the information is fed into a national database. The Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management just completed that process 6 months ago for the entire state. This information is now available to provide for a comprehensive regional response plan, so first responders are well aware of what assets and critical infrastructure they have in their regions. This change in philosophy and corresponding federal mandate are due to the examinations of the lessons learned, and what's worked and what's failed to work in our response to both routine and catastrophic events across the United States. The need for entities to plan, train, and exercise together is the key ingredient to success. DPS feels that due to the increased expectations from the public, we respectfully recommend that DPS be allowed to update this report to reflect and include the most recent federal mandates and lessons learned since 9/11 to create a more comprehensive regional training center approach. And I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Leslie. Any questions of the committee, Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leslie, insofar as your position on the issue of the comprehensive regional response plan, we are about to entertain a number of bills that appear to me to directly apply to that response plan subsequent to 9/11. What is DPS's position on these upcoming bills in general as to what your recommendations are?
Commissioner Leslie.
Mr. Chair, members, we support regionalized training and regionalized response, but we just feel that the report needs to be updated to reflect everything that's changed since 9/11. And we're not comfortable with what is contained, that every person, entity, local government that looked at the plans and made plans have considered that when they did it.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One quick follow-up question. Given that statement, is it your position that the consideration of bills such as are forthcoming is premature, given the fact that the study post 9/11 is so recent?
Commissioner Leslie?
Mr. Chair, members, no, I don't believe your consideration of them would be considered inappropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Murphy.
Chair, Commissioner Leslie, when we did the secure juvenile facilities across the state, in each judicial district, there was a formula for an amount of money based on a variety of things. Mr. Carter knows them exactly, I'm sure, but per capita and number of crimes, that kind of thing. And I think each legislative district got at least $1 million, and no one got more than $3 million. But there was a formula, and then there was matching funds from the various regions. And the counties had to work together and within the region, and they had to agree upon a plan. And then they came to the state and got their money based on that. Was that concept looked at all when you're recommending the regional public safety facilities, fire facilities, and places where these people can train together for the region, so that the money would be fair and that we wouldn't run out and it would be a statewide plan for these regional facilities?
Mr. Leslie?
Mr. Chair, members, no, it wasn't. We didn't examine exactly how the funding streams would be put forth. But I concur with your formula idea that makes sense. We just finished the Homeland Security Division of the Department of Public Safety just finished their statewide strategy. And what we do is we have everyone at the table trying to determine what's best for each region. The people that live, work, and work together in those regions are the ones who tell us what's best for their regions. So we agree with the decentralized manner in distributing funding, but we did not make a recommendation to that.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, if we didn't take action and make recommendations on these facilities that we're going to be asked to take decision on, do you think that committee might then go back and develop a formula and a regional approach with recommendations with a fairness request for the next bonding session?
Mr. Leslie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, you're asking me if I would recommend that?
If the people that you're working with would do that, do you think that would be a next step then if we don't take any action on these facilities that we're going to be asked to?
Mr. Leslie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that's a possible one. We think the foundation, the statewide master plan, is very well done. All we would like to do is just make sure that all the federal requirements that have been placed on local units of government, county governments, and the state governments are all in play there as people begin to plan these regional centers. And we just want to make sure, we just want to give it a good look, a good thorough look.
Further question, Representative Murphy?
No, I think I'll develop my thought a little bit and maybe we'll talk about it later.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, then I think we're finished with that portion. Thanks, Commissioner Leslie. And are you going to be in the room for the balance of the hearing if there's any questions that come up?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda, we'll be looking at House File 2712. Representative Solberg. Welcome to the committee, Representative Solberg. It's the intent of the committee to hear the bill, hear your presentation, and lay the bill over. So with that, we'll begin with your testimony. Would you introduce yourself and your guests?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for scheduling it. Also, I'll have to express another thank you that it's kind of early on the agenda because some people do have a long drive ahead of them with some tough loads. So thank you very much for that schedule. I have with me today Ed Triska, who is the city administrator from Grand Rapids, and Scott Thorpe and Steve Clarity. I had Scott, that's his brother. I graduated with my kids over to my house all the time, so I want to say Scott and Steve Clarity, the assistant fire chief in the city of Grand Rapids. And if we were just talking about building a fire hall, we would not be here. But I think that the testimony that they give you is a compelling need for some state help on a regional and state facility. So they will do a better job of explaining it than I would, and I'd like to have them be able to take the testimony. Thanks.
You're welcome to the committee. Steve, is it Clarity?
Clarity.
Clarity and Ed Triska. Would you identify yourself and begin to speak, and whoever wants to start.
I'll defer to Steve. I'm Ed Preston, the city administrator. I'll stand for any questions you might have.
Okay.
I think Steve has a good understanding of the project.
And I'm Steve Flaherty. I'm the first assistant fire chief of Grand Rapids Fire Department. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for seeing us today. The city of Grand Rapids is requesting capital project funding assistance for a new regional fire hazmat training facility. They're contemplating the construction of this facility with a total project cost of $2,222,900. Our request is for $1,111,450,000 in state funding for the pre-design, design, construct, furnish, and equipping of a new training facility in the city of Grand Rapids for the area that we serve. The purpose of this project is to provide a more rapid, reliable, and efficient response to emergency calls from this location. And as you know, where lives are at risk, minutes and even seconds can mean the difference between life and death. This project addresses the increased risk of response being compromised due to the railroad tracks and the two bridged accesses to the south side of the city and the townships and districts that we serve in our southern region. This is detailed in Exhibit A, which is page one of the handouts that are provided to the committee. This project also addresses the increased special needs of the fire department. Equipment acquisitions for the services that the department provides to our community currently exceed the space available at our Northside station. Past reports from the Grand Rapids Planning Commission from 1960, 1973, and 1978 have supported this project. This support continues today and is at the forefront of our city's administrative agenda to be addressed not only for today, but also for the next 20 to 30 years out. This development that will exert pressure on our ability to provide the service to the southern region of Grand Rapids and our response area. This project has city, township, county, and statewide significance for the following reasons. Regarding the city and townships, the city of Grand Rapids has contract agreements to provide emergency service with 9 organized townships and 3 unorganized townships, including the city of Grand Rapids. The property market value of our coverage area has increased dramatically from 2003 to 2006. In fact, the records indicate that there has been a 48% increase over this 3-year period. 1/3 of the department's contracted service areas are located south of the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad and the two bridge crossings within our city. This area's market value alone has increased 49% over that same period. And at this time, I'd like to direct the committee to Exhibit B, which is page 2 of the handout. And with regards to the county significance, the city of Grand Rapids has been committed to the Itasca County Fire Chiefs Mutual Aid Agreement since 1980. This agreement includes 16 Itasca County Fire Departments and 2 Aiken County Fire Departments that agree to share services and equipment for emergency response, which from our city of Grand Rapids includes the use of city-owned apparatus, equipment, and personnel, the use of equipment available to the Itasca County Fire Investigation Team for countywide fire investigations, the use of the state-contracted hazardous materials chemical assessment team truck, trailer, and equipment, the use of the river defense trailer and equipment provided to our city by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for river defense, the use of a mobile air system trailer, which is acquired through a federal grant in fall of 2005, the use of a Itasca County burn trailer, which was acquired through a FEMA grant for countywide training, and the mobile fire safety house used for fire prevention education training, which is acquired through a state grant for countywide training, and we're expecting delivery of this trailer next month. So as you can see, the Grand Rapids Fire Department has been proactive in acquiring state and federal dollars to acquire additional equipment, and we envision ourselves and our city as a local, regional, and statewide leader of fire service protection, hazardous materials mitigation, and prevention and education training. With regards to the state significance, I'd like to draw the committee's attention to Exhibit C, which is page 3 of the handouts. The city of Grand Rapids has had a contract commitment with the state of Minnesota since 1995 for the chemical assessment team, which includes equipment for containment and mitigation of hazardous materials accidents in the state of Minnesota. Our primary response area includes the 10 counties that are highlighted on that page in north central Minnesota that are outlined, and with our secondary response to include the entire state of Minnesota if we are so requested by the state duty officer. So in summary, the city of Grand Rapids' geography and the increased support capabilities via this new equipment and personnel, coupled with the economic growth to our south, is driving this need for a new facility on the south side, this fire hazmat training facility. These are significant reasons that support the need to construct this facility to enable the Grand Rapids Fire Department to not only continue its growth, but to remain efficient and proactive in the area of fire hazmat service and protection. We envision the Grand Rapids Fire Department as a very important player in the local and, more importantly, the regional and statewide provision of fire suppression, hazardous materials response, training, and fire prevention education. Please consider our application for state funding of this project in order for our city to continue its commitment to providing the best services possible to the citizens of Minnesota who depend on us. Again, I thank you for your time, and I'll be happy to address any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Representative Newman, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Flaherty, what's the total cost of the new fire station facility?
$2,222,900.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
That is the amount that you're requesting from the bond. Are there no funds coming over?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solverkation, the request is for $1,111,000.
I'm sorry.
Half of that.
Yeah, the total project cost is $2 million, and we're requesting half of that, which is
$1,111,450. Forget the $450.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, just to stress a little bit, the chemical assessment team is located in Grand Rapids and does serve a very large area, and some of their equipment that is extremely important for responding to hazardous waste. They're trained to do that. There was a right after they received the equipment, there was a major fire at a oil storage place right alongside the Mississippi River, and through their training and through the equipment that they have, they were able to contain all of that. None of that went into the Mississippi River, and with that type of equipment that we're asking for some statewide support for this. Again, if it was just a fire call, I would probably not be championing this building. Most of us build our own fire halls. But this is obviously have regional and statewide significance. So I appreciate that.
Representative Solberg, this is the region you're talking about for the... But just, I mean, just kind of in passing, what is the distance from north to south in here, just to kind of give us a...
Well, I'll tell you the...
Give the metro people.
If you look at the bottom of Aiken County... the lower part where it says ATKN, or AITK, I'm sorry. Half of my district and the other half of the 3A is in Senate District 3, and that runs from the bottom of Aiken County, including Itasca County, Coochiching, and Lake of the Woods County. That's one Senate district, that's 300 miles.
Okay, gives us a good perspective. Any other questions from the committee? Okay, I guess we'll note that we're just going to lay House File 2712 on the table for possible future consideration. So thank you, Mr. Flaherty, Mr. Triska, Representative Holberg.
Thank you for hearing us.
Okay, next on the agenda for today will be House File 2949. Representative Simpson, do you want to come to the table with your testifiers and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. While everybody's getting organized here, we're going to have the page hand out some information that we've had put together. The reason we're here today is for public safety. Wadena County is asking for an appropriation of $16,595,000 to build a new regional jail and courtroom facilities and law enforcement facilities. And it was kind of interesting to hear the commissioner speak when he was here and talked about the changes we've seen since 9/11 and also the types of crimes and the things that we see today versus what we've seen 30 to 50 years ago when a lot of these courthouses were built, which kind of puts the Wadena Courthouse in that time frame. The judicial needs have changed. The needs of the judges today have changed considerably. So that has really brought us to the forefront. Wadena County is located about 175 miles northwest of here on Highway 10. To kind of give you an idea where it's at, it has a population of about 13,000 people. The median age is about 40, and the household income is about $30,650. Per capita income is about $15,000, and we have about 25% of the people that are listed below the poverty limit. So just to kind of give you a little background about the county. I have with me today County Commissioners, the Chair, Lane Waldo, Orv Meyer, and Mary Harrison, and they have a couple representatives with them that will help them answer questions if you need them. They have their architects with them, and their representative from Elders and Associates also with them. Also in the crowd today, we have Mayor Wayne Walden and City Manager Brad Swenson. So we've got good representation of people that know what the issue is. So with that said, I'll turn it over to our testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Simpson. Somebody commented up here, is there anybody left in Wadena's, eh?
No. Actually, they're there this weekend, but with hockey coming, they may be here soon.
Okay. Well, welcome to the committee. Why don't you introduce yourself and whoever wants to speak first, and then we'll just move through from there. But I understand it's three county commissioners, Lane Waldo, Orv Meyer, and Mary Harrison.
Yes.
So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, who's speaking, and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Lane Waldo, and I am the commissioner of Wadena County. Thank you for allowing us to plead our case, which is a very critical issue for the citizens of Wadena County. By state mandates, which require safe and adequate facilities, Wadena County is in need of improving their jail and court facility, but the county does not have the fiscal capacity to make the improvements that are required. Based on the estimates for a facility that will comply with mandates, Wadena does not have the debt capacity to proceed. Of the critical concern to the public is the potential tax impact of the project. The following statistics will show that for taxes payable in 2005, Wadena County had a proposed levy of $5,324,403, which computes to a tax rate of 84.227%. This is the third highest in the state. Based on a current 2003 estimated population of 13,619, this equals levy per capita of $390.95, ranking the county 51 out of 87 counties in the state. So if the county would proceed with issuing debt utilization of all its debts, the capacity it will require to increase its tax levy by an estimated $1,011,075. This is a 19% increase, which will result in a tax capacity rate of 99.370%, which would increase the per capita taxes to $465.19 and raise the ranking in the state up to 25. These statistics show that Wadena is a poor county with no lakes to provide income or large business or industry to raise up our tax base. We're not asking the state to help with luxuries or culture and leisure activities, but rather we are seeking funds to provide a no-frills basic jail courthouse facility that will meet the mandates of the state and will provide for a safe and protection of our citizen and the state and county personnel that work in the facility. I will now turn it over to Commissioner Mary Harrison, and she'll share some statistics about the economy of our county to explain why we are seeking funds. She'll explain the problem facing our present courthouse and the main reason that we need to build a new courthouse facility. After she is finished, she will turn it over to Commissioner Orv Meyers, who will share the problem with our present jail and the reason that we need to build a new facility. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Ms. Harrison, would you please state your name for the record and then proceed with your comments?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Mary Harrison, Wadena County Commissioner. thank you all for having us here today. You know, as a county, we just don't have economy of scale in anything we do. We're frugal. We scrutinize every line of every budget area looking for places to make cuts. We do not have a tax capacity that is sufficient to this present need. We have no lakes. We have very little tourism. We have no real industries and very few large businesses. Our once plentiful dairy farms have dwindled, but most of our farmers are hanging on to their land and working outside jobs to try and keep it. Almost 20% of our people are 65 or older, compared to 12% in the rest of the state. And many, if not most of them, live at or below the poverty level. So property taxes are a little misleading in a county like ours, because they don't represent the income that one would normally associate with property. And those market values have been driven up by people who are coming from outside buying hunting land that actually contribute very little to the economy. I have older constituents who come up to me and say, we're moving out, we're retiring, but we have to sell our homes and we're moving out. And that's without this jail project. I also have many, many people saying, we know we need a jail, we know what we have isn't safe, but we don't care because we can't afford to do anything about it. We are exactly in the position of a poor working family that makes it fine from paycheck to paycheck, and then the car engine blows up. And one of our problems, if we really, not only do we not have enough bond capacity to build what we need, if we add to this tax burden, it makes attracting new residents and economic development even more difficult, which adds to this downward spiral into poverty. It's really, really difficult. So now I'm going to hand it over to Orv, who will tell you some of our specific problems.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Meyer, would you please also state your name for the record? And then,
Orv Meyer, Commissioner of Ladina County for the past 14 years. About 30 years ago, the present jail was built, and with the idea of putting the proper infrastructure in place to build up, put on another story. Well, in the meantime, the state code, building codes have changed, and therefore it isn't sufficient anymore. It could support offices, but not jail cells. It won't handle the weight. And our present jail is very overcrowded, and the DOC has been very cooperative, allowing us to double bunk and so forth. They extended, I think, very well to us, and they understand our problem. But even with this, we still have an overflowing because of the growing meth problem, which I'm sure you're all aware of, and the separation of female inmates. If we happen to get a female in jail, why, we almost have to furlough three male prisoners to make the separation possible. So it's a very difficult situation. And we have approximately 50 to 60 citizens waiting to serve their sentence. They've been sentenced, and we have that amount waiting to get into jail, you might say. They call up and say, is there room? And it's like the Radisson Hotel, and not today. Yeah. So we have tried different things to solve this problem. We've added sentence-to-serve crews to try to alleviate the number of jail days. And we've even gone as far as hired, we started about a year ago, and we're collaborating with Todd and Wadena County on our community corrections, and we started a weekend crew, hired an extra foreman for weekends to try to alleviate that for people that might be on the Huber or working. And we've sort of kept our own on that, and that's about it. We're just on a level. And the boarding out prisoners and other facilities, I'm sure you're all aware of, is very expensive and very costly, not only in dollars, but in manpower. And, again, you have the great
item of security when this happens, because that's normally when the problems occur when they are being transported. Again, our space issue is critical, and we do need your help to solve this grave problem for the safety and concerns of the citizens of Wadena County. Thank you so much for listening to us, and I'll turn this over to Larry Koch from the architectural firm which we have hired, and he has a few words to try to clear up a few things. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Koch, would you state your name for the record also and make your comments? You can slide in there, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Cook with AKE Architects out of Minneapolis. We were retained by the county approximately a year ago to take a look at their current facility to see what could be done there, and then have since looked at a new facility. What the commissioners have not addressed is actually what we found was a much greater need, was a lack of space and appropriate space in the law enforcement center. They really do not have an operational emergency operations center. Their lack of space for evidence and evidence processing. Deputies process evidence on their desks in the lower level of the law enforcement center. And then also the courts and the lack of security with the courts and the courts facility. Currently, inmates are walked through the public corridor, up a public stair, into the judicial corridor, which is not secured, into an unsecured holding area across from the courtroom, where you basically have the opportunity with the inmates to cross paths with the judge, with staff, with victims, with witnesses, and all of the repercussions that can happen from that. So really, even a further greater need than the jail is the overall lack of security within the courthouse. Several studies were conducted, one of which was looking at what we could do with the current downtown facility. But as Commissioner Harrison has said, you know, you have a 150,000 or 200,000 mile vehicle where the transmission goes out, so how much money do you put into that? We actually found that the cost of doing a project on that facility was as much, if not more, in construction. But what really made the decision to look at a greenfield site was the fact that staying in that jail would require an additional staff position, which over the life of the facility would cost in the neighborhood of $6 million just for that one additional staff position. So we looked at a greenfield site. This is a shared state courts, jail, and city-county law enforcement center that would provide a jail with up to 66 beds, which could be further expanded if needed in the future. Joint law enforcement center with an E911 center, emergency operations center, and then the courts, two courtrooms, and with a secure connection. The structure, as you see on the site plan there, again, the site planning on since 9/11, we've concentrated on separating out public staff inmate circulation patterns, keeping the public parking and drive aisles separated from the facility by 50 feet, which was the big dashed line that you see around the facility, and then providing more secure parking for staff and law enforcement. The second page is the plan. Very simple building, simple structure, precast on the jail, and basically wood frame or metal studs for the other pieces of the facility. It's a very frugal building, meet the basic needs that are required.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, I got to remember Commissioner Waldo?
Yes. Just in conclusion, we know that this is a big but a necessary project for our county, and you know, we have been collaborating with the city in this project. We have a need because our jail and court facility is not adequate. It's just plain not adequate to meet the needs of our citizens and does not provide for the adequate safety. Due to our poor economy, we cannot add additional taxes to the citizens. of the county. Therefore, we are asking for the help from the state for funding this important and, I think, very critical project in our area. The state needs to recognize that there is some counties that absolutely are tapped out and cannot pay anymore, and we need the state's help. I thank all of you for allowing us to come down here and speak in front of you, and if we're open for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions? Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simpson, Wadena County Regional Justice Center. A regional justice center has always meant to me that there's other counties cooperating. What other counties are in the regional corrections? Does Wadena associate with in regional corrections?
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, they're doing this as a self-standing facility, and they are doing it as a single county. And when they use the term regional, I think they're talking about the region that Wadena County consists of. So it's not a multi-county facility. It's a single-source facility.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simpson, how many beds are in the jail today?
13. Representative, we have...
Senator Harrison, or Ms. Harrison?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have 13 cells, and with double bunking, that allows us 22 beds, because they won't let us double bunk every cell. And our average waiting list is about 60, and we board several out.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, when Wadena County boards out, what counties do they work with to board?
Mr. Chair?
Commissioner Waldo, I'm getting confused here.
Ms. Murphy? Yeah, we use Hubbard, Morrison, Todd, we've used Otter Tail, Fox Center.
Representative Murphy?
I can't find one of those colors. Mr. Chair, who do you do regional corrections with? Is all your corrections just Wadena County?
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Waldo.
Ms. Murphy. It's we are a Todd Wendina Community Corrections.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chair. How many beds does Todd have?
Commissioner Waldo.
Mr. Chair, Murphy, I think I can't say for sure, but they had just added on. I'm going to guess that they have. You heard for sure if they're like 60?
They're thinking of building.
Okay, they're thinking about also building on. Isn't it? No, I thought they built on. Excuse me, but I think they built on, and I think they're at like 60 beds.
Representative Murphy.
We had several talks, Mr. Chair, with Todd County.
Ms. Harrison.
Excuse me.
Just for the record, so if somebody's listening to it, knows talking. So, Ms. Harrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had several talks with Todd County, and they have just built, and they have all the space they need.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, and Commissioner, indeed, they have that for you to rent on occasion.
Commissioner Harrison?
That was one of the that I checked.
Yeah. Occasionally they do. We have one prisoner in Todd today.
Representative Murphy?
I'm a little confused about the title, of the Regional Justice Center title. When I think of region, the region I'm in has five counties, and it's the largest counties in the state, primarily. Representative Clover just came, and there were 10, 11 counties in his region. And we're talking regional, meaning Wadena County in this case.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Waldo?
I'll try to answer that. That was one of my questions, too, when the bill was out, is the region. What I was told was that by going with the city of Wadena, it was considered a region, and so that we just left it in.
Representative Murphy?
Here. Okay, thank you. Then... are there city taxes going into this, as well as county taxes going into this?
Or is it just because they live
in the city, county, that they're paying just their property tax? But is there some funding coming from the city as well as from the county?
Mr. Chair,
Waldo?
There is. We are working with them to... we're supplying them also with room in the facility, and we're in negotiations with that, how much they can spend, also on maybe something to do with space, maybe in the electrical department or the roads, but it's in negotiations right now.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, in the discussion with the city and the county and the states and so forth, and I know that county jails are usually county jails, and but on the second page it looks like there's an awful lot of work that is not, or a lot of space that is not just county space. And so, negotiations with them, in the sense that they would pay for their share of the square footage, or what?
Mr. Waldo, yes, we have talked about a rent in the new facility for the city, that they would pay rent. We're also
for the operation,
yes,
but not for the building.
It's a rent.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to explain that I'm asking these questions because I'm also on the bonding committee, and when this gets there, there's fewer of us that know the answers. Was this discussed when we were talking about the state takeover of the court? When we were talking about that and going into the state takeover of the court, was there discussion with your county and the people that were promoting the state takeover, the courts, that your courthouse was not adequate?
Mr. Waldo?
For the courtroom needs?
Mr. Waldo?
Chair, I think, you mean when the state was took over the county, I'm going to refer that to county, or Commissioner Orr Myers, because I was not a county commissioner at the time.
Were you? Mr. Myers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, I was at that time. I know it was an issue that was brought up, but I can't specifically say when this occurred, but the situation with the courthouse has been discussed with various judges and so forth as far as the security problem is concerned. It's been there for quite a while.
Before 9/11.
Before 9/11, yes, it was.
Representative Murphy.
Wanted that on the record.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Then we have Representative Newman and Paymar, or to that issue, or
no? I'm sorry, I thought you were moving to the next.
Yes, okay, so we have Representative Newman. I think Paymar, and then we'll come to you, Representative Meswell. So Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simpson and presenters, I also am from a rural council. I will tell you that my county in the last few years went through a multi-million-dollar renovation of the courthouse. And we are, in my county, presented with the very same problem that you have with respect to your jail. So I want to tell you that I am not unsympathetic with what you are faced with. but as I'm sitting here, I'm wondering what the folks out in my area would think if I were to support this particular bill, given the fact that I know that we are in my county and raising real estate taxes in half for the last few years to try and put some money aside, because we have to build a brand new jail for the very same reasons that you are bringing up. So I am sympathetic, but with those thoughts in mind, I have two, I think, pretty quick questions. Number one, what is the statewide significance of the state providing funding to build a jail in Wadena County?
Commissioner Waldo, or you want to take that one?
Chairman, I guess Wadena County just cannot afford it.
Representative Newman.
My second question then would be, we're looking at a bonding bill here of $16,595,000. I want to get at the issue a little bit differently than what where Representative Murphy was coming from. What's the total cost of the project? You're looking for $16 million out of the state. What's the total cost of the project?
Mr. Waldo?
Mr. Chair, that's the price of the whole project.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Newman.
I take it there is no money coming from the local, at the county level, city level, for this project, and you're asking the state to pony up all of the money? That's in my understanding, correct?
Mr. Waldo?
Mr. Chair, yes, you are.
Thank you, Mr. Waldo. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Okay, we have two more questioners. We need to move along if we can, so we're going to lay this bill on the table. There'll be more time to discuss, so if we can keep our questions brief and our answers brief, it would be helpful. Representative Pamer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newman asked my question.
Peter Representative Meswell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It follows up a little bit on what Representative Newman was asking. I know you can't speak for all of the commissioners, but Commissioner Waldo, I know that the governor's guidelines for many of the bonding issues have been a 50% share of the cost to be picked up locally. My question is something in that range a deal breaker for Wadena County? Is it your perception that Wadena County simply can't afford to contribute to this project at all?
Mr. Waldo?
Mr. Chair, again, I'm only going to speak for myself. If the other commissioners would like to speak, they can. I'm at the point where I don't think that the citizens of Wadena can support even half of it.
All right, thank you.
No further comments? Okay, I think no further comments. We're going to be laying the bill on the table for future consideration, so we appreciate your time here this morning and helping us answer the questions that we have, and thank you. Any further comments, Representative Simpson?
I'd just like to thank the committee for listening to this, and just I understand exactly where Representative Newman's coming from and Representative Murphy's coming from, and I think that Wadena County is going to have to weigh all their options. But as you heard from their testimony, they are very challenged, and they're not doing this because it's something that they feel that it would be fun to have. This is being done because it's a need basis, and they're working with a judicial system that's demanding need. I've toured the facility. I did a ride-along with the judge one day, and the judge was very determined that something needs to change if they're going to continue using this facility for court systems. So it's a tough issue, and I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. With that said, we will lay House File 2949 on the table for future consideration. Next bill we'll consider today is House File 2609. Representative Saylor, if you want to come to the and testify. We're gonna push on as fast as we can. So if you want to have a seat and Representative Saylor, if you want to make your opening comments, and then we'll move on as fast as we can here. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you also for your time in listening to our request. Clearly, throughout the state of Minnesota, there's an identified need for emergency training centers. We are not obviously the only one coming before you. And since we have that need throughout the state, we also would like to just further, I guess, say distance is a big, big situation for us up in the Northwest. And one of the reasons that they have come together with this request, because simply the distances of getting from one place to another for training and for fire services, emergency medical, and all of the other public safety services. And I would like to turn this over to our testifiers. I would like to introduce Tom Senzel, the mayor, and of Gonvick. And it's the city of Gonvick that is making this request. Wayne, pardon me? In the county of Clearwater, serving 27 other counties. The city of Gonvick is located in Clearwater County.
And then you said serving?
And this facility is to serve 26 other counties in the area.
Okay, but why don't we let them make the presentation, and then we can come back with questions, Representative Murphy. So why don't you proceed, Representative Sala.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, Wayne Hotchkiss, who is the project consultant, and Stacey Halverson, the city clerk from the city of Gonvick. And I thank you.
Mr. Tenzel, you want to speak first? Why don't you say your name for the record and then proceed with your comments.
Tom Senzel, Mayor, City of Gonvick, which is Clearwater County. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members for letting us speak here today. I guess basically what we're doing is, this is a NETAC for short, Northern Emergency Training Administration Center. And what we're doing is trying to serve 26 counties in northern Minnesota, which, if you look on page 2, we did hand out two handouts for you, a large white one and then a smaller brochure, which is kind of a general overview of the whole project, probably a quick glance project. It's in a little folder, probably green or blue. And if you would look on page, I believe page 2 of that, smaller one, you'll get an idea of where our service area is, what we're trying to encompass in our service area, northern part of the state, and where Gonvick is located, about 100 miles south of the Canadian border, about 300 miles northwest of here, I guess. Basically, what we're trying to do is our training facility is going to incorporate five components: fire training, which would be hazmat, or which would be search and rescue; smoke rooms; live burn simulations in a four-story burn tower; would be law enforcement; be two firing ranges. They can qualify with their weapons. We'll also use the fire tower for simulations, terrorist threat situations, and multitude of other situations they come across. All EMS training, mass casualty training, and different types that first responders and emergency personnel will come across. And hazardous material, lab training, any other kind of hazardous material training. We have a bulk station from Enbridge that's up in our area, which is very... It houses a lot of crude oil, which would be a very hazardous material situation. It would be a complex kind of a training facility for situations if something like that would be happening in a terroristic type situation. And communications and technology, type of communications that we can be able to incorporate with all other law enforcement so they can communicate with each other easily and securely in type of a crisis, whether it be a terrorist threat or a natural disaster. And again, we follow in incorporating or coming up with this project, we follow guidelines from Minnesota and the federal Homeland Security and also the Minnesota Public Safety guidelines when we came up with this project. We followed those guidelines and when we put this together. And so I guess, again, it's encompassing a multitude of different things that we want to produce here. And train our first responders. And the reason we're doing this is because the training we have up in Gonvick, we're a town of 294 people. And we're, again, we're about 4.5 hours away from the cities where our training facility would be. For us to, and we're totally strictly a volunteer fire department, and most of the fire departments in the region are. And that's what we're trying to help is all those regional fire departments. And to, for us to travel down to the cities is costly and time-consuming for a volunteer fire department like ours and the surrounding communities that we would help, you know, in this training. And I guess I'd like to turn it over to Wayne Hotchkiss, our consultant here, and he can give you a quite quick synopsis, a little more in-depth here of the project.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hotchkiss. Would you state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, my name is Wayne Hotchkiss. I'm project consultant. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. It is a great honor for us to be here today. Thank you all very much. I would like to start that we've worked on this project for well over a year, and in that term, we've established a lot of paperwork and documents, and for today, we bound those documents into this manuscript for your review. In this manuscript, we speak to the pre-designed draft for the State Architect's Office, cost detail table for the Department of Finance, letters of support, preliminary capital budget request, and the revised proposal, original proposal. I believe, if I understood right, Director Leslie spoke to the difference in regions, and I think he was referring to environment similarities and dissimilarities and cultures and so forth and so on. When we say Northern Emergency Training Administration Center, we are referring to the region of 26 northern counties, as Mayor Stencil referred. In the process of putting this design together, we consulted extensively with the Homeland Security guidelines, and we pretty much studied all of it. We also studied the federal Homeland Security guidelines and tried to fashion our proposal after those guidelines. Also, for today, we generated a portfolio. Yours may be a different color. And on the front cover in the pocket, you'll see the first glance data page here for your review. And if we start with, this speaks primarily to, it's a cooperative effort of Gondik and fire department of Gondik. We speak to the purpose, location, a summary statement, and project components. If you look about halfway down, you'll see some of the project data, and there'll be specific numbers speaking to those. We also have, a little farther down, a project schedule, start information, end information on specific line items. And at the bottom of the page, we try to put down some questions we thought may be asked and our answer to those questions to work with the project here. If we look on the abstract, is actually pages 1 through 8. And if we look on page 1, we see an artist concept of the two structures that would be constructed. The first one would be the major complex with classrooms, indoor firing range, the communication center, technology center, and so forth and so forth. That structure will measure 160 by 90 feet, which would be a gross square footage of 14,400 feet. The cost would be $1,152,000. Now, we are referring to slabs, pre-poured concrete slabs. We're told by engineers, structural engineers, that this would be more sound and cost-effective going this route. You look at the bottom of page 1, we look at the fire tower, which is 30 by 30 and 4 stories high. Total cost on that would be $288,000. We gained our information, or a lot of it, through the process of architectural and structural engineers, on-site visits, research and data archives, and first responder interactions. So we put a lot of homework into this process. If we turn to page 2 of the abstract, we start in with the summary statement and the purpose, vision.
Mr. Hotchkiss, I don't want to push you here, but we have a lot of bills to hear, and we have to be moving faster than we're moving through this thing here. So could you kind of summarize your comments in a little tighter framework so we can ask some questions and get to that part of it?
Okay. Thank you. On page 2, we start the component training. There are 5 components. Okay. Today we brought technical support. Dan Johnson is the fire chief. Dave Hotchkiss is the communications technology person. And Dale Smunk is a fireman. From pages 3 to 8 are the actual summarizations of the component. On pages 9 through 13, we speak to the spreadsheet's operational budget. I'll move real fast accordingly. On pages 14, starting on pages 14, we have inserted 45 letters of support and county resolutions. We canvassed the 26 counties. If we look on the back cover, I'm skipping through a lot, so I'll leave those for questions here. On the back cover, if you notice, a picture of a fire that occurred on Christmas Eve day. It's a little difficult here to talk about, but it's an example of inadequate responder training. And what happened was a local policeman was the first on the scene, obviously inadequately trained, and he stood and watched the fire rather than positioning himself at the end of the lane and direct emergency fire equipment. This is the result pretty much of what happened. It was a complete loss, not only for the family, but for the growing children. It was upwards of $100,000. To me, that a loss of personal property is a disaster. The loss of sentimental objects and memories is an emotional tragedy. The irony of this situation is very perplexing. I started with this project over a year ago, and a year later we were burned out. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Hotchkiss. Any other... Ms. Alderson, did you want to make some comments, too?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you turn to page 9, at the operating expenses, you can see that the annual operating cost is $259,108. And that's the total cost to operate this facility right now. In June of 07 and each year following, we factored in an additional 3% for the inflation multiplier. In the next page on the revenues, each membership cost is $150. We calculated 450 memberships. There are 15 components, and if you look under the first column, this is the charge per group session. We calculated 9 sessions for each component per month, and this brings the total revenue for the year to $411,375. These numbers are very conservative, and again, each year we follow an additional 3% for the inflation multiplier. This brings our annual operating income to $153,267. The total cost of this project is $4,229,000. Wayne, would you like to speak to this?
I think the total cost would be $4,246,000 because there's a 6.1 line item inflation multiplier here. So that would be $244,000 for the inflation multiplier.
If you turn to page 13, these are the total costs before the inflation multiplier. That's $3,998,150. And on the bottom is our budget. You can see our city does not operate on a large budget. Our total adopted budget for 2006 is $231,230. However, the city donated 6 lots with a market value of $18,900, and that's 8% of our whole budget. And if you consider other non-tangible services, it puts it at 12%. And we're also prepared to donate an additional 6 lots if needed. The city will host this facility, and I don't anticipate it affecting our budget because it is a separate budget that is self-sustained. However, as a small town, our limited financial position keeps us from advancing funds for this project, which is why we're asking for your help to fund the construction and design of this facility. I just believe this would be a great asset to all of our northern Minnesota.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Do we have any questions or comments from the committee, Representative Paymer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Saylor and Mayor, I'm not sure who this is directed to, but I just want to make sure I understand this. The counties that are going to be served, you have them listed on page 2 of your booklet, but it seems to me that, if I understood Representative Solberg's bill, that which is a similar center, if I understood the testimony correctly, that you're serving some of the same counties. Is that, Representative Saylor, are you familiar with Representative Solberg's bill?
Representative Saylor?
Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, no, I was not familiar with Representative Solberg's bill, but I do know that this group has been in contact with all of these counties, and they do have a list. I would defer to them as to which counties they have contacted and received letters of support from.
Okay. Representative Paymar.
Well, I just have this map here, and it's the same counties, Cochiting, Lake of Woods, Beltrami, Aiken and Cass and Hubbard. So I don't know, maybe we need to, before, as the bill progresses, we should probably clarify.
Good. Mayor, I forgot your name, though.
Kendall.
Okay.
That's all right. But I guess it is a little different. I think Grand Rapids is more in the hazardous material, but they have hazardous, for response to hazardous spills, like they refer to the spill by the Mississippi River. They're more, they have the equipment and trailers for hazardous spills to respond to them, clean them up, and work with that. What we're doing is training volunteer fire departments, law enforcement centers, EMS, to respond to emergencies in their everyday routine, you know, work that they do. Whether it be firearms training or firemen going into a burning building, fire simulations and smoke simulations. So it actually is two separate training. There's not necessarily a training facility. Theirs is more of a facility to house their hazardous material. And but the way I understand it, so it's kind of it is a different type of facility.
Thank you, Mayor Stenzel. Any other comments? Representative Meslow, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hotchkiss, I think this would be for you. As I look at the budget, it includes $500,000 for, it appears to say, furniture, appliances, and fixtures. Can you tell us what that's about?
Mr. Hotchkiss?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. Sorry. Yes, this form is generated by the Department of Finance. This is a state form, and this would refer to maybe air conditioning units, various. It wouldn't be your actual furniture as such. It would be in a structure when you contract with contractor, they literally construct the building. That does not always include the office equipment, but we're not talking the equipment the state doesn't fund. We're talking air conditioning, heating ducts, such as that. Thank you,
Mr. Hotchkiss. Any further questions from the committee? Representative Saylor, would you like to make a closing comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I had not had the opportunity to really look at that map of Representative Solberg's, but I was peering over my glasses at it just a minute ago. And I did note that there are a number of counties on the northwest side that are not encompassed by any other regional training center that I have heard anything about. And it's the folks up in this northwest area that are really seeing the most dire straits for needing to have this training facility, because the distances really, really do add up. And I know that it was also an issue of saving money for the local fire departments, EMTs, ambulance, the entire public safety group, was to save money for those folks as well. Thank you for hearing this.
Representative Murphy, do you have one final comment?
Just got a final question there. I'm just curious of how the city is going to provide this wonderful training facility for all these counties. How did that come to be? That the city was going to offer their matching money. And I assume the city is matching.
Representative Saylor? Mr. Hotchkiss?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, the way it was concluded to be in Gonvick, it's not a Gonvick project. It's a northern, meaning the 26 counties of northern Minnesota. It was decided upon with Gonvick due to the central location. It's strategically located within those 26 counties. So the distance would be equal for all counties that would send their volunteer departments to that area. As far as the contribution by Gonvick, the city of Gonvick, that's where it will be located. It won't be a Gonvick project. But if we look at how much Gonvick has donated, just the city, it's $18,900 in the 14 through 19 lots, and they're willing to donate additional lots. Also, if we look at non-tangible services, they've also donated up to or exceeding 3.6%. So overall, of their budget, of Gonvick's budget, on page 13, I believe, exceeds 12%.
Representative Murphy?
So, Mr. Chair, the matching money, the money that will be matching is the $2 million. Is that coming from the fees charged then? Where is the matching money coming from?
Mr. Hodges?
Mr. Chair, members? Yes, the matching 50% of what you're referring to, if we look at our fast page sheet here, is a breakdown of the matching money also. And there would be $2,246,000 additional above the actual state award. The total cost would be $4,246,000,000. We're requesting $2 million from the state. The additional money will come from federal sources and private foundations.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. You've traveled a long way. We appreciate your coming this morning. So, or this evening, I guess it is. So with that, we will lay House File 2609 on the table for future consideration. Next bill on the agenda will be House File 2818, Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir, Mr. Corner.
In Grand Rapids itself, they got the statewide fire center there, a huge building. And I'm wondering, they did a lot of training when I was a game warden up in that area, fire training. Can't they take up any of this burden? Is there anybody from Grand Rapids here that knows anything about the fire center in Grand Rapids? They have a huge new building up there right beside the airport, the statewide fire center. I was wondering what kind of training they did. Maybe there's something. It looks like they vacated it. Something I'll do research on my own.
House File 2818, Representative Demmer, Rochester Regional Public Safety Training Center Burn Simulator. Representative Demmer, we had a brief discussion earlier. How many of these four witnesses do you have with you?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just have one.
Very good. Give us a summary of the bill, and then ask your witness to give about a five-minute overview, and then we'll see if there's questions.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. The Southeast Minnesota Regional Safety Training Center is a collaboration of about 11 counties. It's going to be a joint effort of the Rochester Community Technical College in Rochester, the Riverland Community College in Austin, the Army National Guard located in Rochester, the County of Olmsted, the City of Rochester, and Gold Cross Ambulance Service. Those are the organizations that will be working in this this multi-phase operation. What it is, members and Mr. Chair, is it's a three-phase project, and we're talking about phase one here today. The total project is $3.54 million. It's for a burn unit for training for local fire departments as well as the Rochester City Fire Department. The request from the state of Minnesota is for half, $1.77 million, to get this project going. It's something I've been working on for about 4 or 5 years, Mr. Chair and members. The page is handing out some letters from some of the area fire departments, and also a letter from Mr. Brian Staska. Mr. Staska is one of the persons we were hoping was going to testify here today, but he is in fact doing some fire training tonight, so he couldn't make it at this late hour. Sheriff Warkart would like to have come because he's been working on this. He's at a funeral. So so with that, Mr. Chair, I will defer to, I've got Assistant Fire Chief Lyle Felch here with us tonight, and he can talk a little bit about how the facility will be utilized.
Deputy Chief Felch, welcome. Give us your name, title, and then go ahead.
Mr. Chair, it's Lyle Felch. I'm Deputy Chief with the Rochester Fire Department, and actually I'm here today representing about 1,600 firefighters in the southeastern Minnesota region, about 900 law enforcement, or 600 law enforcement officers that work in this area. This facility Representative Denver said, a collaboration of multi jurisdictions, including, of course, the city, the county, and be located near the National Guard Center in Rochester, which is kind of where Rochester comes in, because we will be, as part of our participation in this, will be the donating of the land, the site development, and the guarantee of the matching funds for should we get this $1.8 million. The project will focus on constructing of a police, a fire, training building, staging building adjacent to the existing Minnesota Armory, and will eventually be providing both fire and law enforcement training facilities. Not much different than what we just heard from the Gunvic folks. Pretty much the same type of training. Locating it in the community of Rochester, because we do have a full-time department, we do have a significant amount of full-time individuals that would act as trainers. Brian Staska with Riverland Technical School would be able to schedule training there on a pretty much a daily basis in the evening and weekends. The full-time departments in the community, including Rochester, would be able to use this facility during the day, as would the Umpqua County Sheriff's Department, law enforcement officers, RCTC, the Rochester Technical Community College, has a law enforcement program there, so this building and facility would eventually be used not only evenings and weekends, but normally during the school day as well. I guess I'm not sure if there are any questions. I know this may not be the first time you may have seen some of this material, so I don't want to be redundant, and I'd like to defer to any questions at this time.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions from the committee? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, the bill says the first phase. How many phases do we have in this project?
Chief Hill.
Mr. Chair and members, there will be three phases, and this is basically the initial phase for, we'll get the site developed, it'll get the pretty much the training, the fire portion, the fire simulators. I might add that the fire simulators are gas fired and environmentally safe. There's not going to be any issues there, and so that's pretty much the first phase. The second phase actually be work with the firing range for the law enforcement folks, and then the third phase, which would include driving, tactical driving for law enforcement, skid pack as far as teaching law enforcement how to drive safely in all types of weather. So the first phase is fire. Second phase is upgrading of the pistol ranges in the armory as part of this facility. And then the third phase would be on-site paved roadways and driving areas on the site that the City of Rochester will be providing.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, sir, then what is the cost on the second phase, the third phase?
Chief Felch.
Any ideas? I'm not sure on that because we have developed this on the first phase, and we've upgraded these numbers to 2006 figures, and allowing for inflation. I don't have a breakdown of the future phases at this time.
Do you anticipate that the future phases, Mr. Chair, the future phases would you would be coming back to the state?
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to Representative Demmer.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, the three phases of this facility are totally standalone. This burn facility is all by itself and that sort of thing. Actually, the proposal I have here shows out in maybe 2010 to get into phase two. And, yeah, they'd be coming with some sort of matching thing at that time. They're estimating a $3 million facility possibly when it gets to phase two. But Representative Murphy and Mr. Chair, that's a way out.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Demmer, is there some sort of a matching phase to this, matching amount to this 1.771?
Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, yes, the City of Rochester is contributing all the land and the infrastructure, and they're contributing enough cash to be putting in the other $1.78 million that's required to get this project done.
Representative Murphy, anything else? Any other questions? Chief Phelps, thank you for being here. Representative Demmer, Chair will lay the bill over for possible inclusion and recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Representative Powell, House File 2558, Dakota County Public Safety Support Center. Representative Powell. Representative Powell, if you'd like to give us a brief overview of what you're asking.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask for some three very simple amendments to be to put the bill in the shape I'd like it.
All right.
And I hope we're working off the same piece of paper, but line 7, I believe, should start out where it says $14,790,000. Is that correct?
That's what we have, yes.
Okay, just mark that out and change that to $7,760,000.
$7,766,60. All right. Your next item?
And then on line 9, strike the words land acquisition.
Go ahead.
And then on line 15, again, replace $14,790,000 with $7,760,000.
Chair, just for the record's sake, Chair would move those corrections and see that they're incorporated. We're going to be laying this bill over, but without objection, the bill will be laid over later with those changes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill was brought to me by Dakota County, who has collaborated with the 11 largest cities in Dakota County who will be partners in the project. The completed facility will include a communication center that will consolidate all the dispatching services in the county into one dispatch center. The county and cities have committed to funding this portion of the project, and construction will begin soon on that part of the facility, which has a total cost of $13,860,000. What we are seeking is state participation in the amount of $7,760,000 in state bonds for the public safety support portion of this regional facility. This facility will support a regional center and will include these elements: space for the Special Operations Team and Drug Task Force. This team is comprised of police, fire, and emergency service staff from all the jurisdictions from within the county. Also includes storage of mobile command vehicles and other specialized equipment, including space for garage bays in which radio and computer equipment and law enforcement vehicles can be serviced and repaired. SWAT teams serving the region could have a secure location to store and maintain their equipment. Centralized booking and holding facility for use by the sheriff or city police departments. Most cities don't have holding cells, and the county jail is often filled to capacity. It also includes space to support regional training, major investigations, and a centralized emergency operations center. This space would regularly be used for technical training, for dispatch, for police, and IT training, and would be equipped to serve as an emergency operations center for large-scale disaster responses.
A regional facility is especially important in this location because of the proximity of several large installations with features of special concern to emergency responders. 14 miles to the north of this site is the Mall of America. 7 miles to the northeast is Flint Hill Refinery, the largest oil refinery in the upper Midwest, and just 5 miles north of that is the Marathon Oil Refinery. 7 miles to the west is the Burnsville Mall, another regional shopping destination. And finally, just 26 miles southeast is the Prairie Island Nuclear Power Plant. Space to support development and coordination of homeland security strategies and initiatives, major investigations, and a centralized emergency operations center. This space would regularly be used for technical skill development for dispatch, fire, police, and IT personnel, but would be equipped for conversion to an emergency operations center for large-scale disaster responses. A centralized emergency center that facilitates regional public safety response to a variety of emergencies does not exist today and is greatly needed. I have with me today Commissioner Joe Harris from the Dakota County Board of Commissioners and the Burnsville Chief of Police, Mr. Robert Hawkins, to testify on the bill.
Who wants to go first?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner. My name is Bob Hawkins, Police Chief with the Burnsville Police Department. And I thank you for your time tonight. I think one of the things I'd want to emphasize is really our focus is on the consolidation of services and the interoperability piece. Certainly as a leader in law enforcement, I certainly learned the importance of consolidating resources. I think typically in the past, historically, we'd like to think we can do it on our own, and we like to try to have the biggest and the best in our backyard. And I like to think our intentions are pure in the sense that we're trying to provide the best training for our staff so we can deliver the highest level of services, but certainly we can no longer do it by ourselves. The fact that we have 12 entities coming together to create one communication center. We used to have 6 PSAPs, public safety answering points. We're going down to 1, and we're going to kick off that center August of 2007. It's quite an effort. I think it's really unprecedented in Minnesota, the volume of that consolidation. And I think it shows our commitment and sincerity to moving towards this piece also. Without trying to be redundant, obviously, Representative Powell did a good job of talking about the different assets and resources we'll bring together. I guess I'd like to make myself available to any questions that you may have.
Any immediate questions at this point? Commissioner?
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joe Harris, and I'm a Dakota County Commissioner from the City of Hastings, and I chair the Legislative Committee for the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. I'm here to speak in support of this bill to add a public safety support center to the Dakota County Joint Dispatch Center that is currently under construction in Empire Township, which is roughly the geographical center of Dakota County. The site is owned by Dakota County in its present state. This facility will serve as a new joint dispatch center for all of the governments in Dakota County, as Chief Hawkins pointed out, and that is has come about as, with the result of many years, several years of negotiations between Dakota County and 11 major communities throughout Dakota County to bring about that in a tax-saving and local unit of government working together effort that new dispatch center is going to have when we open it up in the fall of 2007. This site will also host a 800 megahertz tower being constructed by MnDOT to be part of the metro and state network for the new emergency communication system. And shares the site with the Dakota County Highway Maintenance Facility also. We feel that this will be an important addition to augment the law enforcement assets of our region. As was pointed out by Representative Paul, Dakota County finds itself surrounded by several regional facilities such as Prairie Island Nuclear Plant and the refineries, and Dakota County is continually in a training mode as it pertains to those particular facilities, both on the state and federal federal level,
as we prepare for disasters for those facilities. One other facility that was left out was the International Airport that is just on the across the river from Dakota County, located in Minneapolis-St. Paul. That facility also requires Dakota County and many of our communities to continually prepare for a possible disaster as it pertains to that facility. I'm sure the chief of Burnsville can recognize that. So in short, we do ask for your support of House File 2558, and we would like to be a partner with the state of Minnesota and continue to be a partner with our local governments within Dakota County to bring about this facility. So thank you, and I will stand for any questions also.
Any questions of either one of the gentlemen? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Harris, First Fed Hall said that this was a partnership with 11 of your largest cities. How much area or how many cities are excluded from this project then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, basically the 11 communities are the 11 largest communities, ranging anywhere from 12,000 to 70,000 people in population. The other municipalities that are located in Dakota County are well under probably 2,000 in population, and they're being served by the County Sheriff's Department, as well as the 13 townships that are being served by the Sheriff's Department. So it's really the 11 major communities of Dakota County that make up probably two-thirds of the population.
Other questions? Seeing none, Chief, Commissioner, Representative, do you have any closing remarks?
Other than this, that all the communities involved here worked for a year and came up with several strategies to consolidate public services. This is one, and I think it's a good achievement and something that should be supported. I thank the Chair and the Committee.
Thank you for your patience as well, and the Chair will lay the bill over on the table. Possible inclusion in our recommendations. Next, we would have House File 2530, Representative Beard. Representative Beard, this is on House File 2530, Scott County Public Safety Training Facility, and have you just returned to the building from a trip anywhere recently?
We sure did, to the site in Jordan, Minnesota, Mr. Chairman.
Give us an overview, and we have all the time that's necessary, but try to remain brief, and then we have, I think, three of your witnesses. So go ahead and tell us about this issue.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I do have one amendment that actually corrects the amount of bonding request. I believe you have it in front of you there. And, Mr. Chair, while you're considering that, we do have handouts for the committee. Apparently the page is already on it. Thank you.
The amendment is on page one, line 7 of 14, deleting the $11 million figure and inserting $4,220,000. Mm-hmm. All right, Representative Beard, we'll deal with that number in this bill. Go ahead.
Good, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm glad to be the chief author on a bill that has many authors throughout Scott County for a Scott County Regional Training Facility. Actually, it's hosted and funded primarily by Scott County, conceived of by the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency, which you'll hear more about in a moment because it is important to how this project came to be. It is, however, held out as a regional training facility with, I think at the moment, there's seven counties involved in indicating that they would use this facility to keep their members of Public Works, Police, and Fire current, qualified, and certified positions that they hold in keeping the public safe and secure. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce the former chair of the Scott County Board and the current chair of the Scott County Association for Leadership, Mr. John Ulrich, who has a few remarks, and only two of the four testifiers will speak today. Mr. Ulrich, if I may.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm John Ulrich. I actually
I'm the current chair of the Board of Commissioners. It's my second term in that role. I'm also chair of the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency. And this project really sprang out of what we call SCALE, Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency, which is our eight cities, our townships, our Sioux community, and school districts, and so forth. The SCALE concept or SCALE group is an association of all those members. We were recognized by the state auditor in her 2004 best practices as an example of collaboration, cooperation, and our goal was to provide government services and projects with a great amount of efficiency through collaboration and so forth. And early on in SCALE, we began to discuss the need for a regional training facility for police, fire, sheriff's office, and so forth. And originally it started off primarily as a Scott County initiative. And as we laid the groundwork and ordered a site study, it became apparent as we were discussing with our neighbors in the different surrounding counties and the greater region that our training needs and the needs of the region were the same. And so we began to work with all our partners in the region to try to develop this this concept for a regional training facility. And then in the process, we identified the site for the regional training facility, and that was the what was formerly our jail annex near Jordan on the 169 corridor. And as we identified that location, not only did we up to this point expand it to a regional concept, but we also broadened the scope of what would be provided at this facility. Not only would it be the police, fire, and sheriff's training, but it was expanded to training for public works, rail, EMS, hazmat response teams as well. And then one thing about this proposal is it's not only is it regional, but it's comprehensive. I believe there's a site like this in the state that will offer the complete package in terms of all the different training opportunities available. It also has a sleeping quarters. It has a site laundry. It has kitchens, so that anyone coming for extended or multiple day training, you can stay there. There's no need to find accommodations, or it's really the total package in terms of its regional nature, but also comprehensive in the full spectrum, and then also available multiple day training, stay right there. And virtually every public safety professional that's heard about this or visited the site has not only endorsed the concept, but they've said publicly that they would use this facility. And this includes places like Burnsville Police and Fire, Carver County Sheriff's Office and Fire, Chaska Police and Fire, Egan Police, Hamburg Fire, Lakeville Police, Lafleur County Sheriff's Office, Nicollet County Sheriff's Office, St. Bonifacius Fire, Sibley County Sheriff's Office, South Central College, and the St. Paul Police, and the list of supporters and partners that would use this facility is growing by the week. And we believe that this is a proposal that will go a long way towards meeting the state's needs to provide a regional public safety training facility in this post 9/11 environment that we find ourselves. And at that point, I'll stop and I'll turn this over now for a more technical explanation to our Deputy County Administrator, Gary Shelton.
Mr. Shelton, give us your name and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gary Shelton. I'm the Deputy County Administrator for Scott County. And quickly, I'll do a little bit of review of what Commissioner Ulrich had to say, but we'll try and keep the remarks relatively brief. The facility is designed to respond, again, to all of the public safety providers that respond to significant incidents and everyday incidents within the community, not just police and fire, but also the emergency medical and public works providers who quite often are overlooked in the arena of public safety. However, when you talk about responses to significant incidences, public works plays as important a role as many of the other traditional public safety providers. The concept itself expanded, as Commissioner Ulrich indicated, greatly when this particular site was reviewed, in terms of the fact that, and this board here, which is also in your packet, outlines what the facility itself would provide in terms of public safety training. The facility is laid out in such a fashion that it provides the opportunity for several unique things, particularly unique within the metropolitan area of the Twin Cities. For openers, it provides an area on an active rail line where we can put a rail spur in. We've had discussions with the Union Pacific and also with Burlington Northern, who are interested in the concept. They're interested in utilizing the facility for their own purposes. But nowhere in the state of Minnesota do we have access to realistic rail safety and rail incident training. The closest that we have it to the state right now for this type of training on a realistic level on a live rail spur would be Mesa, Arizona, where quite often people from Minnesota go to. In addition to which, the facility would incorporate a 200-yard firing range, and the siting of a 200-yard firing range in the Twin Cities metropolitan area is a very difficult task. It's hard to find an area where it would have minimal impact to communities, to residences, to businesses. This area is ideally suited for that, and what you see on this diagram that shows us number one is exactly that. It's the siting of a fully baffled 200-yard firing range that would be used for law enforcement to meet all of their firing range training needs. In addition to which, it incorporates all of the fire training components that you've seen in other proposals. It also provides the ability for lab work, for computer labs. There would be a cell extraction training area for correctional officers who work within local facilities or state facilities. There would be a dispatch training area for 800 megahertz training to train dispatchers on site in this particular building. In terms of what already exists, when you look at this, what is shown is 11, 12, 13, and 14, and 15 on this diagram are existing structures. So there are about 50,000 square feet of existing structures, some of which would only need to be refurbished to be used for this training purposes. Some would have to be remodeled. But the structure itself is a very sound, very large structure that does afford us the ability to provide, in addition to large-scale training in classroom areas, defensive tactics training areas, indoor simunitions training areas. It also provides us the ability to house up to about 30, perhaps as many as 40 trainers, particularly important for SWAT teams, for a lot of weekend fire type of training scenarios and those types of things, where people do have to travel. In concept, if completely designed and put into place, the facility would provide training that isn't available anywhere in the state of Minnesota. A good question, and we put a board up, is why this particular facility? And we think there are a number of things aside from the rail that separates this. For openers, it will provide services to the largest number of public safety providers, stretching from Mankato, who was at the site today when the investment committee was there, to the city of St. Paul. And Chief Harrington has indicated his total support for this facility and that his staff would use this facility on a fairly regular basis. It's a broad-based proposal that incorporates all of the public safety providers, including Public Works. It provides some very unique training opportunities, the housing areas, and it provides a rural setting. However, it's in a metropolitan area that has metropolitan services. So there are urban services to this site where we've connected to the city of Jordan's municipal wastewater system. It also provides a very badly needed 200-yard range in this area, which, as I indicated, is difficult at best. In terms of funding, and I'm going to put up just one more slide, which is also in your packet. The funding it's estimated that the total cost for this project would be roughly $10 million. It's $9.9 million, of which $7.6 million would be construction. $1.5 million is what we're valuing the site at, although I would tell you that that's probably a minimal value for this site in terms of what it would cost if we had to go out and purchase the site, but the site already exists and is owned by Scott County and would be donated to this particular project. And $754,000 in technology that we would be looking to put into the facility. In terms of project funding, we would be seeking state funding of $4,219,726. We would be looking for $754,000 in funding from the federal government, primarily for the technology, because it is an area that there are easier funding streams for us to obtain the types of technology that this facility would incorporate. The site is being donated, and the scale partners have committed to a cash contribution of $3,466,000 to complete the construction of the facility. In terms of operating costs, and I won't go into the costs themselves, but they are outlined in the pre-design document, which is in your folders. It's estimated that the operating costs would be roughly about $385,000 a year to operate the facility to its capacity, and that would be funded entirely by user fees, which are actually estimated relatively conservatively at only $20,000 a year, although I think they would be substantially more than that, and then roughly $365,000 a year that would be contributed by roughly the 11 agencies that have committed, and plus Scott County, that have committed to the operation and funding of this facility that would be operated by a joint powers agreement in terms of its ability to meet regional needs. And so, with that, I would stand for any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Appear to be none. Thank you, gentlemen. Representative?
Are you,
just one second, I will.
Certainly.
Representative Beard, did you have any closing remarks?
I just had a closing comment, but if the representative would like to ask a question first, I'd be happy to sum up in three sentences.
Go ahead with your summation.
All right. Thank you. You know, I carry things like this very carefully and very soberly to the committee. This is the taxpayer's credit card we're working with, and to my way of thinking, it truly needs to rise to a regional significance before we can come and ask this committee and the bonding committee to open the taxpayer, the statewide taxpayer first, to make these things work. I've been part of the scale organization since its inception 3 years ago as the legislative liaison, because I'm fascinated with and admire the way every township, school district, and city in Scott County works together to collaborate for maximum effectiveness and efficiency for the people they serve. One of the things we constantly ran into was trying to keep our fire departments qualified to find burn places. We're running out of houses to burn down, frankly, as development happens. But beyond that, it needs to be more sophisticated. We can't be burning down 50-year-old houses and having firefighters crawl through those kind of structures when the houses that are being built today have new technology and new building methods. And trying to get metro area burn time in Minneapolis or Edina or St. Paul or Bloomington was getting more and more difficult. And our smaller fire departments in particular were really running against an issue of scheduling and having these folks take time off to get there. This was sort of the genesis for this entire discussion. And as we began to put this plan together, it became apparent we weren't the only county with these issues. Furthermore, we expanded it beyond just fire and police to include our public works people, who oftentimes are dealing with explosive gases and sewer lines. They're the ones that clean up the mess after a truck rolls over, and so on and so forth. So we expanded it to be a comprehensive center that I think the region can be proud of and that you could vote with confidence. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your time and your attention to this packet and this information.
Thank you for your closing and your good remarks throughout. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, before we go on and leave topics of the public safety facilities altogether, I would like if staff, either in writing or if we could have a short part of a meeting on the issue. We funded one fire train facility in Marshall, and I would like a report on the utilization of that facility and if they are meeting the goals that they sold us on at the time that we awarded the money, the bond community awarded the money for that facility, and see how what kind of progress they've made. If we could find that information out. And then I would also like to know, because I was speaking to Commissioner, Homeland Security Commissioner, and said several of these projects mentioned that they were going to get federal funds. And I assumed the federal funds would come through the Homeland Security Office of the Public Safety Commission, or the Department of Public Safety. And that doesn't seem to me to be a sure thing. And I'd like to know more on the availability of federal funds for this kind of project.
Representative Murphy, on the first request, I don't recall the bill number of the Marshall issue, but I believe it was Representative Seifert who would present. Am I wrong?
I'm not sure. I remember Representative Lindsay.
Oh, that far back?
It's far. It was the first one. I think it was almost before we even did the study.
We can get a written staff report available next week on this issue. If you want testimony, we can look at doing that after we get the report, as well as, and good suggestion by the way, on the second part of your request, these projects tonight that have promised, touted, suggested getting federal funds, we can put in the request to the DPS Homeland Security tonight and get that same information, get a confirmation or an analysis of that back to us by next week as well.
I think that would be good, Mr. Chair, because we're going to make recommendations.
Yeah. We'll put the request in tonight for both of those items and get them ASAP.
Thanks a lot.
Very good. Anything else? If not, we'll take up House File 3004. Representative Mesler, you're doing anything right now? Come up here.
This came very close attention.
Okay.
Come over here and take some attention.
Representative Smith, welcome to the committee.
Yes,
we're now prepared to hear your testimony and testifiers on House File 3004.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. like the other ones, this bill can the motion should be that the record should reflect that it should be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Committee's bonding recommendations. I think this is not perhaps a standard bonding request, Mr. Chairman, but thanks for the opportunity and committee to present this bill. Boils down to a single question, and that is, and I wanted to generate this debate again in this committee, and perhaps in this legislative session, when the people of Minnesota exercise their rightful power to take away a person's freedom for violation of the criminal law, should that person be held by a state or local facility that is owned, run, and managed by the people of the state of Minnesota, or not? Put simply, should we take responsibility and control of the people that we condemn to prison or to jail? Should we prohibit our prisoners from being placed in private jails? In the bill, Section 1, at line 8, it would place that prohibition on state prisoners. On Section 2, line 22, it would place the prohibition on county prisoners. Finally, in the bill, on page 2, I believe line 30, it would instruct the Commissioner of Administration and Corrections to open negotiations with the Corrections Corporation of America for the purchase of the Prairie Correctional Facility located in Appleton, Minnesota. We can debate, and we should open that debate in this session, about the savings this would generate for the state because of lower per diem costs for prisoners. We can debate the greater safety of corrections officers, of prisoners, and the general public when prisoners are held in public facilities. We can debate the challenges to public safety, prisoner safety, and the state liability when citizens are held by private corporations. And this committee is the place to start and keep those debates going. With me today, I would first like to introduce, and with the committee's indulgence, Julie Blyle of the Minnesota Council 6 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees to add to my remarks.
Thank you, Ms. Blyle. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. And with me today, we have Carrie Corky, who's Director of Research and Collective Bargaining from our international in Washington, D.C. Buddy Maupin, the Regional Director of Illinois Council 31. And Sid Helseth, our field representative from AFSCME here in Minnesota. And I'd also like to express that Nate has asked that they go on record in support of House File 3.4. I also have prepared comments from the two testifiers here today and would give those to the committee for their distribution. So with that, I'll turn it over to Carrie Corky. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blyle. Ms. Corky, would you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, my name is Carrie Corky. I'm Director of Department of Research and Collective Bargaining Services for AFSCME in Washington, D.C. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify this evening on this very important issue. I've got a couple people with me who know the state of Illinois and the state of Minnesota correction systems very well. I'd like to give you a little bit of a national perspective. And from a national perspective, the Minnesota correction system stands out in a couple of ways. One is that by many measures, it's one of the best in the country. And two is that compared with other states, Minnesota so far makes very little use of private prisons. On the first point, looking at correction systems across the country, there's a number of measures on which Minnesota does well on this core governmental responsibility. One is spending. Minnesota ranks 39th nationally in per capita spending on corrections. In terms of spending as a percent of income, it ranks 49th. Another is the rate of incarceration. In part, low spending is due to the fact that the state of Minnesota has a low rate of incarceration, it has a low crime rate, a decent community correction systems, and so on. In 2004, Minnesota ranked 49th in the country in terms of rate of incarceration. Another measure is cost controls. Minnesota's inmate population is increasing. And while many states are seeing slower growth in inmate population, Minnesota in 2004 saw the fastest growth in the country. So things are changing here. But at the same time, the DOC managed to bring its cost per inmate down between 1996 and 2004 by about 12%. Another measure is staffing. In a job in which experience counts, Minnesota correctional facilities had a turnover rate of about 9.5% in 2004, and that's compared with a national average in public facilities of 15.5%, and in 2003, turnover in private facilities around the country was 40.9%, more than four times as much as Minnesota's turnover. And since labor costs comprise about 65 to 70% of the costs of a prison, they are the most obvious places to cut, and in fact, private prisons do cut in terms of levels of staff, pay, benefits, and high turnover is one result of this. And then last but not least, in terms of outcomes, Minnesota does well also. Cost and staff information doesn't mean a whole lot if prisons don't do the job that they're supposed to do of returning people to society. Minnesota employs 12% of its inmates, more than double the national average. The percent of inmates idle in Minnesota prisons is 14% compared with 40% nationally. And this may help to explain why the three-year reincarceration rate in Minnesota is 33%, while nationally over half of the 650,000 people who are released from state and local jails each year return to prison within 3 years. The National Study of Recidivism concluded that prisoners aren't getting the help they need in prisons in order to return to the community. While recidivism rates in Minnesota are probably higher than you'd like to see, compared with other states, Minnesota seems to be doing something right. And then in terms of use of private prisons, as of 2004, 34 states and the federal government contracted with private facilities to house almost 99,000 inmates. Minnesota at that time had no contract private facilities. Minnesota now has several hundred inmates at the Appleton facility, and that number is planned to increase to 1,700 by 2007. By my estimate, that would put about 20% of Minnesota state inmates into this one private facility. That would appear to make it one of the largest facilities in your state. Nationally, 5.6% of state prisoners were in private institutions in 2004. In fact, the percent of state prisoners in private institutions has been declining slightly since 2000. So Minnesota, with its flagship prison system, would go from being one of the lowest users of private facilities to one of the higher. This is dangerous public policy, I believe, for a number of reasons. One, let's look at costs. The traditional rationale for housing people in private facilities as opposed to public is that private facilities save money. Yet numerous studies by objective researchers and ones that compare apples to apples find little to no cost savings whatsoever. And I've cited some of the major studies in my written testimony that you can refer to. And that's not even considering the hidden costs, which can include the cost of quelling riots or capturing escapees and so on, and do definitely include the cost of negotiating monitoring contracts, which by estimates of procurement experts can add as much as 15 to 20% of the cost of any contract. So what we find is that while private prisons don't save taxpayers money, they do cut corners. Private prisons often won't handle inmates with serious medical or behavioral problems or will charge the public jurisdiction for those costs. And in fact, that's explicitly the arrangement with the Appleton facility. Challenges identified by the DOC include the cost of health care, mental health issues, and drug offenders, especially those involved with meth. Contracting with a prison that has the explicit right to refuse inmates with these problems seems an inadequate way to address these challenges that you face. Private prisons, including Appleton, often provide less programming for inmates. In 1998 and 1999, Judy Green, a senior Soros fellow, interviewed prisoners at Appleton as well as three state-run medium security facilities. She found that the services offered in the public prisons were rated much higher than those at Prairie on a number of different dimensions, and that more DOC prisoners are in education and treatment programs. While the state is relatively old, it could help to explain the relatively low recidivism rate. The private prison industry also has a mixed safety record, has encountered serious legal problems, and has seen many financial ups and downs. In addition, once a jurisdiction contracts out a function, it loses control, and that's particularly critical with a function like corrections. Corrections officials in North Dakota just found that out when they were asked to return prisoners that they had at the Appleton facility recently. And finally, and fundamentally, any jurisdiction should be concerned about contracting out such a critical government function to a for-profit company. Depriving a person of their freedom is a very serious matter and not something that should be contracted out to the lowest bidder. That said, Minnesota has an increasing inmate population and continuing increases projected in the future and limited bed space. You have a dilemma. And even Prairie Correctional Facility will apparently not be able to hold the number of inmates you project in the near future. This is a critical time for your correction system. So in essence, prison funding hasn't kept up with sentencing policies, and it's a dilemma that many other states have faced. Some have dealt with this dilemma the way you may, by sending prisoners to private prisons. Many have come to regret that. Some jurisdictions have revoked their contract, and in some cases, private companies have decided not to continue the contract themselves. In recent years, just the last couple of years, Maryland discontinued a contract for a private juvenile facility. The state of Nevada took over operation of a women's prison from CCA. Tulsa County, Oklahoma, did not renew CCA's contract and brought the operation back in-house. The state of Michigan closed its only private juvenile facility, and the Federal Bureau of Prisons did not renew CCA's contract for the Eloy Detention Center in Arizona. So addressing this dilemma by putting so much responsibility in the hands of a private company may seem like a short-term solution, but what you really need is a long-term solution to this serious challenge. HF 3004 would put Minnesota on the path to a long-term solution by requiring that state prisoners and county prisoners be housed in public facilities and requiring that the state purchase Prairie, We urge you to maintain Minnesota's commitment to a high-quality correction system and to maintain control of this core governmental responsibility by supporting HF 3004. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Corpy. Mr. Maupin, did you have some comments to share as well?
Thank you for the opportunity to be heard today, Mr. Chairman. I'm Buddy Maupin. I'm the regional director for Illinois AFSCME Council 31. I direct the union's activities in the Illinois Department of Corrections, and I'm a former rank and file juvenile corrections union member and employee. And I come here today at the invitation of Minnesota Council 5 to testify on House File 3004 and relate our experience in Illinois with respect to our state's ban on private prisons. Illinois passed the Private Correctional Facility Moratorium Act in 1990 by bipartisan majorities in both House voting in favor. It was signed into law by our Republican governor at the time, Jim Thompson. And in the ensuing 16 years, a bipartisan majority of our legislature has found this policy to be an excellent public policy, and it actually extended the ban to dietary, commissary, and interstate inmate transport. Now, over this period in Illinois, elections come and parties rise and parties fall. The Republicans have controlled the House, Senate, and governorship at the same time, and at other times the Democrats have. Most of the time it's been a shared power arrangement. And I raise this to emphasize the fact that there is a bipartisan consensus in our state that the incarceration of criminals is an inherently governmental function. When a public body cedes operational control of a prison to a private party, it's not without risk. As you know, the issue of sovereign immunity and liability can be an expensive one for this or any legislature to deal with. After all, there are occasions in the operation of a correctional facility where deadly force to be used against an offender. Our legislature decided in 1990 that the exercise of that vital responsibility should be limited to professionally trained staff who answer to elected representatives of our democracy and not to a CEO or to private shareholders. Our legislature was also concerned about the ethics of exploiting workers, because let's face it, a private prison company can't buy commodities cheaper than the state of Minnesota. Private prison company can't buy utilities, real estate, fuel, or vehicles cheaper than the state of Minnesota. Private companies, prison company just buys workers cheaper. And you see that in the turnover rates that were cited in Ms. Corby's testimony. And that's so much cheaper that the low wages subsidize the profits for the shareholders and the salary of the CEO and corporate leaders. Now, in our state, we made a public policy declaration, a bipartisan one, that government should not collaborate in driving down standards of workers who put their lives on the line every day to protect citizens from criminals who have been judged to be not fit to walk among us freely. Further, private prison workers have an unimpeded, federally protected right to strike. When legislatures turn over operational control of a prison to a private company, you also turn over your ability to have any say in the labor relations in that prison. What would you as a legislative body do when these workers wake up, recognize their exploitation by the private prison company, and strike for higher wages? Neither the governor nor even the president of the United States has the statutory authority to get an injunction against such a strike. So that is a potential real consequence to be faced in the event of such an activity. Now, some say that there's an open-ended cost factor associated with this legislation. Our experience in Illinois in the 16 years that we've lived under this type of law is that's not the case. Our law actually cites liability and accountability and cost as factors which augured for enacting the ban. Further, the legislative branch decides what actions or inactions qualify a citizen for incarceration and decides the duration of incarceration appropriate for a particular offense. So all the cost factors are within the control of the legislative branch of government. Now, I urge you to call any member, well, almost any member, of the Illinois General Assembly and ask if the Illinois Private Prison Moratorium Act is a good law. You'll likely get a very positive response. Pick up the phone and call any of the five gentlemen who've been directors of the Illinois Department of Corrections since the enactment of the ban, serving under both Republican and Democrat governors, and ask them the same question, and you will get a similarly positive response. It's a good law. Now, after the elections of 1994, when the Republican Party swept Illinois and many other states and took the House, Senate, and the governorship, a number of private companies descended on our capital, determined to make profits from our prison. Their lobbyists tried to repeal the ban that we passed in 1990. They underestimated our Republican legislators, who told them to go pound salt. They got nowhere, and they haven't tried since. Now, I apologize if I sound harsh in my reference to prison privateers. I know they have an interest, and that's to maximize profits for their shareholders and increase the value of their stock. And they serve that interest with passion. But the state of Minnesota has a completely different interest if you're anything like Illinois. You care about safe, humane, secure, and rehabilitative settings for incarcerated persons to serve their time. I urge you to adopt this legislation and send a message that public safety is a core responsibility of government that will not be abdicated to privateers by the state of Minnesota. And I thank you for consideration of our comments.
Thank you, Mr. Moffin. Representative Smith, did you wish to offer any other testimony on this bill at this time?
Mr. Chairman, no, if there are questions.
Okay. Then we will turn to questions. Representative Tama.
I have a question for the last testifier and then Representative Smith. Prior to 1990, were there private facilities in the state of Illinois?
No.
Mr. Moffin.
No. Mr. Chair, no. There were not.
Okay. So,
Representative Tama.
And this gets at my question then for Representative Smith. If we were to purchase Prairie Correctional Facility, then obviously we need a new state facility. Would that be correct in order to house those inmates after 2007?
Representative Smith.
Answer is probably yes.
And
Representative
Paper. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. And does the governor support? I support your bill, Representative Smith. But does the governor support your bill,
Representative Smith?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymer, I don't know the answer to that. I don't ask him always whether he supports bills or not. But on this particular issue, I simply don't know.
And Mr. Chair,
Paymer,
Representative Smith, is CCA? Are they? Have you approached CCA and are they interested in negotiating a sale to the state of Minnesota?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymer, I have not asked them if they'd be a willing participant in this bill.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, what would happen in 2007 if they decided that they didn't want to sell to the state? Would we take them over by eminent domain?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymer, that depends on how watered down the issue is at that point.
Representative Murphy, did you also have questions?
No.
Any other members of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, have you done any studies or cost comparisons with what the costs would be for this if we operated, the state of Minnesota operated the prison as compared to what we're being charged per diem?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I haven't for this particular hearing. Drawing on my recollection from hearings of last year and testimony we've had and will have, the per diem could be reduced. I'd like, during the course of our sessions committee hearings, I'll be happy to put something together. I didn't get prepared on that particular issue. I just heard the testimony today as to lower costs. That substantiates my belief, and I can find some numbers for that.
Mr. Chairman, I guess the other question with that, have we done any look at the cost, how much it would be cheaper to buy this than to build a new prison ourselves? And I'm assuming it would be, but...
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would imagine it would... Your cost, your savings, or your cost would be measured in the structure of the sale, how over what period of time, etc.
Representative Newman, do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, or Representative Smith, where's this bill headed? Is it, or more accurately, what is your motion?
It's my understanding, Representative Newman, that the motion is to lay this bill on the table for possible inclusion in our recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee. Is that correct, Representative Smith?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, that is correct. Frankly, I had envisioned hearing this bill at the tail end of a hearing that would have ended at noon, as opposed to this time of the day. But it was meant to, it's meant to keep this issue alive. It's one the Chair has prerogative of raising and done so. So it's going to be laid on the table.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone present who would like to testify regarding House File 3004? Representative Smith, do you have any closing remarks?
Chairman, no, I don't. Thank you for your indulgence and those of every member of the committee on this issue. It's one that we will be facing in one form or another down the road, whether it be to expand privatization or to do what Illinois did or somewhere in between. So it's something that we should be constantly thinking about within the context of specifics like lower per diems, etc. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Smith. And at this time, the Chair will lay the bill on the table for possible inclusion in our recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.